Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Horror Hangout podcast, where three bearded film fans watch the best and worst horror movies of all time. My name is Luke Condor, and I'm joined by my regular co-host, Mr.
Ben Errington.
And also regular co-host, Mr.
Andy Conduit Turner. Hello, everybody.
How are you doing?
Everyone's regular now. We're all regular.
We're all regular. That's the good way. That's the best regular way to be. Yeah.
Good. How have you been, Luke? Did you enjoy your little week off last week?
I did. I watched The Gate, and I gave it a B, a solid B, I think. It was good. I really want to, when I thought of The Gate, I was actually thinking of number two in my mind. Like, I think I watched number two a lot as a kid.
Oh, yeah.
One of the little ghoulie men returns and he grants wishes now?
Yeah, someone turns into a troll thing.
Creepy. Is it the same cast? Same kid with the glasses.
In my mind, it's the same kid. Yeah, the metal kid.
Made of metal.
Yeah.
Interesting. No Stephen Dorff, though, unfortunately.
By that point, he was already preparing for Blade.
By that point, three years later. Bless him.
Yeah.
There we go.
What about you? Was it okay without me? No one saying dumb stuff?
No, the other two of us were still here, Luke. So yeah, that we had stupid takes covered. I think Emily probably updated the cultural value infinitely, but it wasn't quite the same. We missed name game. I almost had to text you afterwards just to ask if you had any plays on words of
I was gonna the gate. Do it.
Off the top of your head, can you?
I thought of a good one as well.
Go on, we'll do it while we're here. Relive.
Have you got one, Luke? I thought of a good one. I can't remember it now.
Some guys dig a hole in the garden and they fall in it and there's like a load of modern art on the walls.
Oh, is it the Tate?
It is the Tate.
I'll do one for you, Luke. So one day some people are digging a hole in the garden and as a result, they are tardy for their dinner and they get in trouble by their mum.
The late.
That's right.
Tardy. I always like that word. You tardy.
You absolute tardy. Okay, I've got one.
Go on.
In an 80s movie based on the Jet Li movie, the one where he goes around and finds different versions of himself to kill and become the best one. A certain Miss Winslet goes around killing Middleton, Hudson, and Moss in order to become the best of.
Is it the Kate?
It's the Kate. That's it.
Oh, well, we've done it.
I'd love to see that film.
You'd love to see that film?
Yeah.
I thought about that. I was on my run earlier, and that was honestly all I thought about for about, six or 7 minutes.
Weird the thoughts you have when you're on a run. I was thinking the other day, you know, when you're a kid, you put a tooth in a glass of Coke and it disappears. I was like, where does that tooth go? And I was like, I'm an adult now. I could fill my bath with Coke, get inside, go and find that tooth. Human trials can begin.
Into the Coke dimension.
Yeah.
Or if you drink down the the like Coke with the tooth dissolved away in it, you could put that tooth back in. You might grow a new one like a shark.
Yeah,
exactly.
Get it reabsorbed.
That's what dentists should do then. If you lose a tooth, just go, right, all you got to do is get another tooth. And
maybe that would make Coke, Coke could release a tooth kind. Like if they've got a version of Coke in the factory and they dissolve like shitloads of teeth in there.
Just like 50% teeth.
Full of enamel.
Yeah.
Liquid enamel. Delicious. There we go.
Yeah.
Problem solved and the last episode completed. We've nailed it a few minutes in.
Yeah, there we go. It's the second part. We should have added a disclaimer to the other episode saying for name game, if you want the name game, give us the next episode. Maybe we should do that all the time. We should say, if you want the next part of this podcast,
if there's anything we've missed,
leaving a cliffhanger for people to go to the next step.
Oh, exciting stuff.
Horror news then. Horror news, that's a thing. So I guess we had Mr. Jed Shepherd on an episode recently, the From Beyond episode, can't remember what number it was, like two or three episodes ago. And he told us about his FMV game, Ghosts, his real-time horror game that was on Kickstarter. And it has 100% funded this week. So that's very good. Very exciting. Well done, Jed, and all the team. Looking forward to it. I don't know if we've got an actual legit release date yet, have we?
I think it's a while because they've got to finish making it, right? It's late this year, early next, something along those lines. It's a while. I'm looking forward to it, though.
100%. I don't know if you guys saw the artwork this week as well by Graham Humphreys, the illustrator slash painter. He's done stuff like, I think he's done a Nightmare on Elm Street poster. He's done absolutely loads of stuff, but he's done the official artwork and it looks pretty badass. So yeah, very exciting. Looking forward to it.
And I liked the games of that era as well. I know I wasn't with you when you spoke with Jed, but you guys are talking about, like, you know, those FMV like adventure games you had, like Phantasmagoria and so on. That was very much my jam when I was growing up. I wasn't quite old enough to, because this is long ago that even I was little when these things were coming out, but I wasn't old enough to understand how to do the puzzles, but me and my friend used to basically get these games and then bang our heads against them until we got stuck, and then we'd get a walkthrough and just play through them like they were films that you just had to click in the right bit to go through. And that was it. And there's a Gabriel Knight one where he turns to a werewolf, which on the topic. Yeah, it was great. And Night Trap I had a lot of time for. You can get it on the Switch now.
Can you?
Yeah.
God, that's pretty cool. Very exciting.
I've still yet to play one. In my mind, it's just like Bandersnatch. Like, choose your own adventure.
It's better than that.
Is it? Yeah.
Some of them are better than that. I wouldn't say Night Trap was sophisticated than that.
Well, as I said, I think one of the X-Files game on PlayStation was one that I played, but I think it's a bit different. Was it a bit different? Did you play that one, Andy?
Didn't play the X-Files game, no.
It was definitely similar sort of thing. I'll have to go and find some videos of it and watch it, see if I remember it as well.
Quite a lot of them you can pick up still, and they'll run on modern machines. I think all the Gabriel Knight stuff and the Sierra like video ones are on. I think they're just on Steam, and you know anything on Steam is constantly on sale, so you can pick them up.
Yeah.
Lovely. Other horror news. I don't know if you saw, I think it was last week this was announced, but David Cronenberg announced his next movie. A sci-fi horror project titled Crimes of the Future. It's got Viggo Mortensen, but this week Kristen Stewart joined the cast as well. He did a movie with Robert Pattinson, didn't he?
Cronenberg. Yeah, he did. Yeah. Cosmopolis.
That's the one, isn't it? Yeah. But anyway, so this is the first original sci-fi script by Cronenberg since 1999's Existence. That's how you say it, isn't it? Existence. I don't know if I ever said that out loud.
Lee went all over again.
Bloody hell. It sounds just as ambitious, taking a deep dive into the not-so-distant future where humankind is learning to adapt to its synthetic surroundings. I won't read any more because it looks like there's a lot of detail there. Very interesting, very exciting. Always good to see new Cronenberg. And I do like Kristen Stewart. I think she's really good. She was good in Underwater. Yeah. And all the modern movies I see her appearing in, I think she's playing Princess Diana and something coming up soon. She seems to be killing it. Just like Big Bad Pattinson. As the Battinson. Yeah. What else? What else? Yeah. What else? A couple of things I noticed about movies that are finally coming out. So, UK cinemas are opening on May the 17th. And I think the Book of Saul, Spiral, is going to be released on the 17th. So we'll finally be able to see that. And I think A Quiet Place 2 at the end of May as well. And alongside that, there's been some new images released of Candyman, and it's still heading towards its release date of August 27th, 2021. How long have we been talking about these three films? Since the beginning of time? Was there the Big Bang and then someone went, Quiet Place Part 2?
Feels like it. Do you think the expectations of these films, do you think your experience is going to be ruined because you've been waiting for them so long? They can never meet up to how much? Or are you going to be so happy that you're back at the cinema that they could be absolute, like, shoving knitting needles in your ears and eyes and it'd still be great?
I'm definitely looking forward
talking to about The Boy 2.
Brahms' Boy.
Brahms 2 Furious.
I think as soon as these films got delayed, I kind of switched off my hype. So
yeah,
I was able to do that where it wasn't like I was like, oh god, I'm gonna have to wait all this time. I kind of switched off the hype, and then when it's released, now it is coming out, it's like, okay, I'll probably turn the hype back on when it's like a week until it's out, possibly.
Because we're recording this and we'll have a record to either be right or wrong by in the future, of those three hyped movies, when we've reached the point that we've watched them all and reviewed them all and rated them all, which one do you predict will be the best in terms of our personal ratings?
Oh, Quiet Place 2, Candyman.
And Saw, Spiral, and Book of Brahms.
Hopefully, Candyman.
I feel like Candyman, yeah.
Yeah, it's got to be.
I think Candyman is going to be the best. How many times have we said his name? Doesn't count if it's different people, it's fine.
Pronouncing it weird as well. Yeah. That's how we protect ourselves.
That's how we get away with it.
In a minute, he's going to come to the door and go, sorry, guys, that's not how you say my name. That's quite disrespectful.
Yeah.
I didn't particularly even like A Quiet Place. So some drastic things are going to happen.
The problem with A Quiet Place was that everyone was saying, this is the best movie since
Casablanca.
And we were like, it's not, though.
it's when a new horror movie comes out, and for some reason, like, the main street, like, the film review, like, for TV spots and stuff, seem to regurgitate this same old crap. It's the scariest film of the year. You'll be leaving and not, but you won't be able to sleep for a whole week. All that crap. I'm going to predict now, I reckon Spiral from the Book of Saul is going to be a shit show. Just got a feeling.
He's gone bold.
Really?
Just got a feeling. Well, from the trailer.
From the trailer.
It looks like a spoof. It looks like an SNL spoof of a Saw movie. And that doesn't mean I'm not taking Chris Rock seriously as a serious actor. That doesn't mean that. But
it doesn't help. It does look like he's doing that SNL thing.
So you keep looking at the camera like...
Well, it's like the trailer hit all the beats when you're doing a parody trailer. It hit all the exact right beats for it. So, yeah, I'm worried about it. I'm not worried about it. I'll watch it, but...
Yeah, I didn't watch the clip, but a clip revealed that the classic pig mask will make an appearance, and I'm a bit like, I thought it was going to step away from all of the like same old shit. Oh, I thought it was just going to be very different.
Star Trek Into Darkness all over again. It's not Khan. Stop asking.
Yeah, it bloody is.
James Bond. It's not Blofeld. No, that's a silly. If you think he's Blofeld, you're wrong, mate. Sit down.
Oh my god. Yeah.
And then it comes to, oh, I tricked you, didn't I? It was Blofeld, and the audience were tricked. No, you were tricked.
Yeah, I got you.
Yeah, I got you. You suck.
You old Jigsaw's going to come out there and say, oh, it's me. I still don't think everyone's learned a lesson. I'm trapping him. And it's like, oh, Jigsaw, we were promised it wasn't you. And he's like, oh, it is, though. And that's, in a sense, how you were tricked.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just because I'm not a fan of the Saw franchise, really. Well, I'm not. I only really like the first one. So maybe that's why I feel a bit negative about it. Quiet Place 2, I mean, let's see what happens. But Candyman, I can already imagine, like, everything I've seen from the marketing and the trailer, it looks cool. It looks like it looks slick.
Yeah.
I just feel. And you know, everyone involved has got a good track record.
Got Black Manta from Aquaman.
From Aquaman.
Yeah, well, also, well, spoilers for Watchmen, but he's a.
Just say it.
He's Dr. Manhattan.
I said don't say it, but.
Oh, did you?
Same thing. Same difference.
I thought you said just say it. I mean, you cut out at that exact moment when you went, just say
well,
it.
Well, I don't think I don't know how to spoil anything. People know Dr. Manhattan's in that show.
Yeah. Yeah. Go and watch it. If you're worried about Watchmen spoilers, go and bloody watch it. Come on. Yeah. Okay. And the final bit of news that I saw, I thought I'd bring it up because it's, I'm sure it's something that a lot of people have seen, and I'm sure one of you guys has, maybe both of you. But Dexter is back, and there's a new teaser trailer for Showtime's revival show. I never saw it. Well, I say that. I watched a few episodes of the first series, I believe. But did you guys see it? Are you happy for it to be returning 10 years later?
I saw one episode of Dexter. My sister recommended it heartily. And the episode I watched, the first episode, was fine. But
I mean, the thing is, it's pre-Breaking Bad. So it's kind of like prestige TV, but before it kind of went really, really good. But the first three seasons or so are really good. And the theme tune is excellent. I'm not going to do it all. You can imagine it. But it is good.
That's a good quiz show.
Yeah. It's cool. It's I really enjoyed the first few seasons. And it gave rise to that meme where the guy was like, all rise, motherfucker.
Oh yeah!
Oh yeah! Of course, I said that. Surprise!
Surprise!
Oh right! Yeah.
Oh, maybe I will go back.
See, look, Andy's convinced now. He wasn't convinced before. He's like, "Nah, not interested." It gave birth to a popular meme.
At first, I was like, "No, it's too late. Time marches on." But now,
do you know what's weird? When you see a meme like in real time, when you see like the TV show it's from. And then you see it happen. It's such a strange phenomenon. It should have a name.
Twice in a row. Me and Kat have been watching Parks and Rec and Castle. The Nathan Fillion one where he's like, goes to say something. And then the next one was Andy doing that big, you know, surprise, basically.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I saw the Simpsons one the other day. You know when Homer's like wrapped up in bed and he says, I want big toasty cinnamon bun. I see that meme used a lot. So, Yeah, it should have a name. I think we should come up with a name for it.
Memory. It's like a memory. Inception. But I memory this. No, it doesn't work.
Do you remember? But that's it for the old horror news. Anybody seen anything interesting? I suppose we've got to address the elephant in the room from the get-go, haven't we?
What's the elephant in the room?
It's a Mortal Kombat elephant in the room. Andy's seen it now.
Oh, we've all seen it now.
And Luke didn't get to give his 2 cents last week, so he's probably chomping at the bit right now to jump on in. So I'll let you guys have the floor and discuss Mortal Kombat.
I have a feeling that me and Andy are probably on similar wavelengths because we have had a bit of a chit-chat in the Discord server. I really liked... And I know a lot of people really like this film. People are saying it's amazing. I really enjoyed the Scorpion Sub-Zero stuff. And that's about it. Like, the rest, apart from a couple of cool fatalities, just wasn't really Mortal Kombat for me. Yeah. I'm afraid.
And I can see, I know, Ben, you'd explained that you're just getting back into the latest three games now, right? But otherwise, you had a passing memory of Mortal Kombat as a kid.
Yeah. As I said, a long dormant love for the franchise. Yeah.
I think that is where it would work. But I'm super into, like, I think I'm pretty sure I've got, like, I'm a real sad case. I think I've got all those Mortal Kombat games at launch. And, like, you know, they're like proper games. Like, when it comes out, I don't bother about online stuff. I just blitz the story and I really enjoy it, as ridiculous as it is. And I was super into Mortal Kombat. So I, like Luke, I liked the Scorpion Sub-Zero fights. I like a couple of the fatalities, although I will throw a little bit of shade at some of the others. Like some of them, like a Kung Lao one in particular, is great. Mm-hmm. But some of the others, if you're comparing them to the games, are a little bloodless.
Oh, yeah. Garden Gnome. That's kind of lame, really, as a fatality. Also, one thing that really niggled me, this is going to be a bit of a spoiler, so press the little 30-second skip button on your podcast app now. What was I going to say? Oh, yeah, the Ocean's 11 thing, where it's like, I've got a plan, and then it kind of does the fights as a sort of future montage thing.
Yeah.
It's so, it like zaps any actual drama from those fight scenes. Like a good fight scene, like the reason they should have used the tournament, because a good fight scene is a man or person versus person, and you honestly have no idea how it's going to go. And there's like a real tension to that, like the ups and downs of that particular fight. The fact that they didn't do the organized fight thing really kind of just, I don't know, it's just such a huge part of fight movies.
Yeah.
Like, that's... It's just, I don't know.
I'll give my quick, again, hit this 30-second spoilers, and I'm going to rattle off my other ones. I hit 30 seconds now. No Johnny Cage, no tournament. They wasted some really good characters by just killing them off. And I didn't like the new character. If you're a studio exec and you didn't press 30 seconds, stop having opinions about film studio execs. You're always, always, without exception, fucking wrong. Shut up.
I thought he was going to turn out to just be Scorpion.
Yeah,
I wouldn't have been happy about that either, though.
I
a bit obvious. If you're gonna create a new character, he has to be as cool as the Mortal Kombat characters. But his he just wasn't, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
Just
a man
in a weird suit, like a 3D printed suit.
3D print. It was a 3D printed suit.
3D printed it. That was the final thing I'll say on Mortal Kombat as well. By and large, I thought the casting was great. The people looked the part. You did the right job of actually picking actors that represent where the characters are meant to be from, by and large. The only problems I had was maybe less so in the actors and more so in the delivery. I think the actors playing Shang Tsung and Raiden had a kind of bad deal in the way that their parts were put together and directed, because especially coming off the back of the other movie, the people that played them are such huge characters on screen, and they do a lot and they say a lot and they have all of the best lines in the movie by and large, and they don't really get anything to do. Everything they say and the dialogue, like it didn't work for me. But like, I want to be positive enough about it so we get more Mortal Kombat movies that I like more.
I did quite enjoy watching it. I know I'm kind of having a go at it, but I did think it was still quite fun. I just, I don't know. I just didn't quite do it for me.
I completely understand the problems. There was a video you sent for us to watch, which was like a jokey take on the pitch meeting from Scream Rant. And yeah. Almost everything that they mention in that, I'm like, yeah, it's kind of a bit silly. But yeah, I think it just felt like one of those films where luckily I could put everything to one side and just enjoy it for what it was. Whereas if I came from a different angle where I'm like, I love Resident Evil, and then someone was telling me that those movies were absolutely fine if you just put everything to one side, I'd just be like, holy shit, no way. So
yeah, it's a bit like put this in your mind, Ben. You love Resident Evil. It's a bit like you're getting into a Resident Evil film and then your old mate Bertie Wesker comes in and, you know, just slips on a banana peel and absolutely cracks his head open or something like that and is gone.
There we go. Unlucky Albie. Yeah, there we go. But sticking to the same sort of franchise, I did see Mortal Kombat Legends Scorpion's Revenge, the animated Warner Brothers movie from last year, I think it was. Have you guys seen this? Luke, I think you've seen it.
No, I've not, but I bet it's good. And it's on Netflix, right?
No, it's not on Netflix.
Oh, okay.
Prime.
Did have a little look on Netflix after you said it was on Netflix, and I was vastly disappointed, but don't worry about that. We'll move on quickly. Really, really gory, really entertaining. I kind of hoped it was going to exclusively focus on Scorpion, and it doesn't. There's the inclusion of a lot of other fighters as well.
Yeah,
but at least a tournament situation exists, which is, if you're missing that after watching the Mortal Kombat movie from this year, then there is tournament.
You gotta have a tournament. You gotta have a bracket, not a point system. Elimination.
Yeah.
It's always the same though. It's always like the was it not the Never Realm? What's the one Shansung?
Outworld.
Outworld. They always got 9 and they got to win number 10.
Yeah.
That's always the story, isn't it? That's always the story. I think that's the story in number nine yeah. as well.
Shang Tsung, just why not just focus instead of messing about, just focus your efforts on practicing really hard, putting on a really good show for everyone on the 10th. Make that your best one. Don't try and spoil it by cheating. You're cheating yourself, and Shang.
Don't get your best fighter.
Opens his Christmas presents before Christmas Day as well, that guy.
Does.
Oh, bloody hell. Remote control car again.
Transforms into Santa and goes, oh, no, I'm Santa. I can look at the presents and goes, is that you, Shang Tsung? Oh, no. Oh,
so this mine. Opens the present. Oh.
Oh, bloody hell. It's a Mr. Freeze again. Everyone wanted that growing up. That's what
I want to. I never would get. Yeah.
Sub-Zero would get Mr. Freeze.
I'd give him a Satsuma.
For being naughty all year long. Bit cold.
Yeah. Anything else? Anybody seen anything else this week of note?
Jeez, what are that? I don't think I watched that much. Mortal Kombat, The Gate, The Howling, and then a load of TV, a load of Parks and Rec. Ooh, I just needed TV. That kind of chill watch.
Oh, a lovely bit of chill time. I saw the Invincible finale. Did you guys see that?
Saw that as well. Yeah, yeah. In fact,
very good.
That's one of the best things I've seen in a while. I haven't written that down. Invincible, yeah.
There's a particular moment in this episode with a certain underground transport. And it is literally like the most brutal thing that has ever been put to animation ever. It is literally harrowing.
And not only is it done justice for the comic book, I think it's done some things better. I think a lot of the dad-son stuff is actually played out a little smarter.
It's wise, though, isn't it? Because obviously you're working with a property which has been concluded, right? So I can imagine it could be the most forward-thinking comic book writer in the world, but there's no way Rob Kirkman had, like, plot of episode 155 or whatever it finished on in his head when he did issue 1.
In his head. Yeah.
Sorry. He's got the whole 155 issues in his head.
I'm waiting to go in on Invincible. Like, I bought the compendium so I could read all the comics, and I think I'm gonna read them first, and then maybe I'll watch it. Unless by some miracle I catch when everything else I'm meant to have watched.
It has series 2 and 3 have both been confirmed as well, so we're definitely getting more.
Your gold.
Yeah. It's really good. The only thing that confused me sometimes is the music choices. Sometimes they're just not what I picked, not what I heard when I thought about it. Like, they do kind of work, but
yeah, it makes me feel like I'm watching like a teen, like a teen drama or something, and it does feel a bit odd. But yeah, it's really really good, and it makes me want to go. And as I said, I've only read a few volumes of the comic. I do want to go and pick up more now.
Oh, grand.
Anything else?
I watched a couple of things for once. Obviously, a nice bank holiday weekend. You know what? I'm going to call it horror adjacent. I watched The Mitchells versus the Machines, where the robot apocalypse happens. Very good if you haven't seen it. It's a completely jolly animated family film. Luke, I know we saw it together, in fact. It's got a lot of Spider-Verse vibes to it. It's very nicely done. Like, the animation is stunning. It's just a good fun, like, genuinely laughed out loud at several points as this dysfunctional family try and deal with the end of life on Earth because robots have taken over. And then I watched a film which tonally very different robots. To A Nice Family and versus robots. It was I watched Promising Young Woman, was great but incredibly sad and harrowing, but definitely watch it because it's brilliant.
I bet it's good.
Did it win much at the Oscars? I think it won Best Original Screenplay, did it not?
I don't know. I've not been following.
It was nominated for a lot of stuff, but I think it popped up.
One. Those cowards didn't play by the rules. If you're not going to give everything to Sonic from last year, get to fuck.
Get to fuck.
Yeah. Then change the rules now, Oscar.
The only other thing I saw was Palm Springs. Don't know if you guys have seen this. I missed
it. I've seen it. It's great.
That's great.
Yeah. It's kind of one of those that I'd missed and I'd always been meaning to watch, and I'm glad I did. Yeah, it's a really nice, lighthearted, romantic comedy, and it's like the science fiction elements are really, really good, and it's like it almost has got limitless possibilities. Like, how long? I mean, spoilers for Palm Springs. You might want to go forward 30 seconds. How long do you reckon Sandberg's character has been in this time loop for? I read somewhere that it might be 40 years.
Thousands, yeah, forever.
In Groundhog Day, the original Groundhog Day film, they do say some of the writers, I can't remember his name now, Ivan something. No, whoever wrote it, he wrote Danny Rubin. He did a book called How I Wrote Groundhog Day. And I think even in that, he was saying, like, they didn't really know how long he'd been in there, but they were saying probably thousands of years. So it does kind of, I think it adds a lot to the whole concept. But
yeah,
this Palm Springs is maybe the best version I've ever seen since Russian Doll.
Which is not that.
Is it the best time loop movie you've seen this year?
Exactly.
It's a bit like when it's like product of these adult Muller Rice wins product of the year, and then it says underneath in the flavored rice category. So it's like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty good though. I really liked it.
Yeah, I rated it. It's great. That's it though. Anyone else see anything? Or is it just The Howling?
The Howling.
We watched it because it's the 40-year anniversary of The Howling.
Yeah, so it was the 40-year anniversary like last month. Oh, I say last month, like March. Middle of March, and I think I'd noted it down as something we should probably do. Because I can't remember the last werewolf movie we've done. We've done a few, obviously. We've done American Werewolf. We've done Dog Soldiers. We've done
Ginger Snaps. The werewolf does feature a bit in old Van Helsing.
And Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There we go. We got all the wolf dudes. And
it was time for a wolf covered. Where they get the title role.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what we needed. So, The Howling is a 1981 American horror film directed by Joe Dante and starring Dee Wallace, Patrick McNee, Dennis Dugan, and Robert Picardo. It's based on a novel of the same name, by Gary Brandner. The film follows a television newswoman sent to a remote mountain resort after a near-fatal incident with a serial killer, unaware that the resort's residents are possibly, maybe, werewolves.
Yeah. So IMDb has it at 6.6 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes critics score is at 70%. User score is lower than that at 58. Letterboxd has it at 3.3 out of 5. A couple of choice reviews here. Benjamin, a different Benjamin, I believe, said, "Fuck maybe. American Werewolf in London. The Howling is the best werewolf movie ever made." 5 stars. So he was really into it. I think there is a bit of a... either The Howling, the Howling fans or the American Werewolf in London fans.
They came out the same year as well.
Yeah, interestingly as well. Kind of so Rob Bottin did the sound effects, the special effects for this, The Howling. His mentor, the name escapes me at the minute, did the special effects for American Werewolf in London. So there might have been a bit of a rivalry there. I might be making that up. Who else? So Brandon LG put Dog Shit, 0.5 star. And Egg Zach Lee put, "Holy shit, this is by far my favorite werewolf movie I've ever seen. Holy shit."
That a werewolf came into the room and just took him away. Took him away into the night. Holy shit.
An American Werewolf in London fan came in. Holy shit. 5 stars he gave it. First time watch.
Yeah, this was the first watch for me. Again, another one of those movies which I've no idea how and why I've never seen it before, because it seems right up my street. The sort of era as well of 80s horror that I thought I'd seen everything of. But no, this was a first timer. It was a bloody first timer.
Yeah.
What about you guys?
I've got it on Blu-ray. I picked it up a year or two ago. First time watched that time. This time, second time, which?
Andy?
I've seen it on telly years ago and in a really disjointed fashion. Like, I'm not sure I'd ever seen the beginning. I think I've maybe historically, like, jumped in from about halfway. So I don't think I've ever seen the start before I sat down to watch it for the show.
Beginning almost feels like it's a different movie.
Like, it is weird that, the exact same
just
thing.
Just doesn't really feel like the same film. As soon
quite
as
dirty at the start. Quite a dirty and adult.
Grungy.
And then it becomes like the Gremlins. Like, it gets more of a Gremlins vibe.
Well, so Joe Dante, what had he done prior to this? Because obviously Gremlins didn't come until... Gremlins didn't come until 84. So before this, he... Piranha Inner Space was 87. I'm not just a fountain of knowledge. I've got it in front of me. I'm not just rattling this off. So Gremlins was next after The Howling, 84. Inner Space, 87. Gremlins 2, 90. So before this, he did Piranha in 1978. Rock and Roll High School, which is like a musical comedy, in 79. But his first film was Hollywood Boulevard.
I love his filmography. Like Small Soldiers. I love that movie growing up as a kid. Inner Space, although I don't think it's amazing. It's got some great bits to it. The Burbs, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
I've not seen Piranha. The Howling.
Piranha's great.
And Gremlins 1 and 2. Like two of the greatest masterpieces put to celluloid since Casablanca.
Exactly, yeah. Gremlin. Did you enjoy Gremlins? Yep. Now enjoy the new batch. We've got a spider one. An electricity one. I don't want to rip off the Key and Peele sketch. So go and watch Key and Peele pitch Gremlins, because you know that will change your life. Small Soldiers, though, I love that. I used to love that film. The Gorgonites. Oh, we are the Gorgonites. We are.
I haven't seen that in a long time. That is a good film. I miss it.
You switch the TV on any Sunday, ITV3, Luke, it'll be on.
Gremlins 2.
Yes.
No Small Soldiers.
No Small Soldiers. Kirsten Dunst is in that as well, isn't she? I remember Kirsten Dunst being in it. And, I was going to say Scarlett Johansson. What am I thinking of there? I'm thinking of someone else where she's young and in a movie like that. It'll come to me at some point. But yeah, I love that movie. I was about to say we should focus on that, but it's definitely not a horror movie. I suppose it could be if you're terrified of toys coming to life and shooting you little...
Ben, if we can crowbar Congo, we can crowbar Small Soldiers.
And then where does it end? Because Small Soldiers, in essence, is Toy Story. So let's just do... We'll just do the Pixar movies on...
Yeah.
I suppose Wall-E's kind of like a sort of horror movie in its own right.
Post-apocalypse. Yeah.
Sorry, Luke, go on.
I'm just having a bit of a weird moment here. So as on Joe Dante's filmography, clicked on Gremlins, the guy who does the voice of Gizmo is Howie Mandel. I was like, he looks a lot like David Draymond from Disturbed. And I was like, actually, he looks a lot like the guy who does the Americans Got Talent thing, like David Draymond from Disturbed. And then I realized, hang on, is David Draymond not the guy who does Americans Got Talent?
No.
For years, I thought it was
his little soul patch.
For years, I thought it was the lead singer of Disturbed. I always thought, that's weird. How did he end up there?
Howie Mandel's got a soul patch, whereas the lead singer from Disturbed has got like a sort of metal thing. Metal soul patch.
Cyber soul patch.
Going down a Wikipedia hole is impressive. I found this guy on, I think he's on Instagram or maybe TikTok, where he gets given two random subjects. And he's got to get from one to the other on Wikipedia in under 30 seconds. So if you wanted to go from Gremlins to the band Disturbed, you're halfway there.
That's so weird. I honestly thought they were the same person.
There we go.
Yeah.
So cast wise, we've got Dee Wallace, who pops up in everything from this era.
One and only. Cujo.
So obviously. She's been in... So films that we've reviewed her in are Cujo. Covered that, didn't we? What else? What are her big ones? E.T., obviously. What can I think of that? Jesus. So she followed up The Howling with E.T. 1 year later. She was in The Hills Have Eyes, Cujo. Just trying to look at classic horrors, but that's kind of it for classic horrors. Critters, sorry.
She's back.
Alligator 2, The Mutation. I mean, who can forget that?
Why didn't you lead with that one, you idiot?
No, I missed it. Read it there. And the last thing I saw him, I watched Free from Hell, probably a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
She's like a prison guard in that. And I was like, is that Dee Wallace? It is. There's even a moment in this movie where she's in a car as werewolves are trying to get in. And I was just like, this is Cujo. This is basically Cujo. And I think it's got another actor from Cujo in it as well. That what's his name? What's his flavor? Dennis Dugan, maybe? It's her boyfriend in this. Patrick McNee is in this as a doctor. He's the guy, all I recognize him from is The Avengers.
John Steed,
exactly. The Avengers, which is the reason why in the UK it had to be called Avengers Assemble, because for some reason, for the like 2% of the population, it would see that on a cinema listings and go, they remade the film with John Steed. Oh, I'm going to go and watch it. And they turn up and go, who's this big green bastard?
Basically, like one person's nan is going to get tricked. So I better just rename the entire film.
You better name the entire movie, because the UK population cannot be trusted to go and enjoy a movie about a team of superheroes. They'll think it's a movie from years ago. Well, they did remake it, didn't they, with
Uma Thurman.
Uma Thurman and
someone else. Is Sean Connery like a weatherman?
Yeah, and Sean Connery's like an evil mastermind who controls the weather, which is what all evil masterminds essentially want to do. It's on their list, bucket list.
But based on that, if that's the kind of antics the Avengers got up to, if someone accidentally went and saw Marvel's Avengers, wouldn't they be fine with the content? They'd be like, nah.
I suppose you're right. But if you had your heart set, if you'd gone to the cinema and you had a heart set on seeing John Steed.
Yeah, where's his bloody hat and his what other accessories that he has?
Yeah.
Some form of cane. I'm just trying to work out. The Avengers, 1998, that came out in. Spy action film. I'm not sure if I've seen it. Anyway, and then the rest of the cast of this movie are made up of this sort of colony of folks who live in, was it like the woods with like
cabins. It's like self-help retreat,
that's
spiritual,
right?
retreat
like like not Tweety Pie, the cat who tries to eat him. It's full of a load of odd characters, like some people who, there's like police who are there obviously like keeping an eye on things. There's a man who's like
police. There's an old chap that fancies being burned up.
There's an old man who's like terrified of fire but wants to jump in it. So various different ages of people, they're all sort of there in this colony. There's a woman who looks like she stepped straight out of like a Hammer horror movie. It's all pretty interesting.
We'll come to her when she turns up, but in the story, but like as soon as you get there, you'd be like, yep, you're going to try and seduce old Bill, aren't you, mate? Yeah, old Marsha. You're going to be
two guys
all over him like a rat up a kilt.
Rat up a drainpipe. There's two guys as well, a man and a lady. I think are a couple who are like investigating werewolves and stuff. Yeah. And they get quite a substantial role. They almost feel like, remember in the Halloween remake, the recent one?
Yeah.
Those two guys who were going about recording a podcast about Michael Myers. I kind of wanted them to have a significant role in that movie, like, but they got killed off quite early, didn't they? So these guys get a similar role to that when they're trying to unpick everything, go into a bookshop, finding out all they can about werewolves. Luckily, the man who's got the books on the werewolves has also got some silver bullets for sale, which is handy.
Come on, Dick Miller, he's ready.
Who's the Quist guy as well? Robert Picardo.
Yeah, so Eddie Quist is like this Well, I guess we just get into the plot, because the first section of the film kind of needs to, you need it to kind of set everything else up, but it does feel a bit far removed from the actual
Law and Order. In the beginning, we have our sting operation.
Yeah.
So I get a bit confused at the start. So she's a news reporter, kind of the network movie.
She's
vibe.
Like a news anchor. She's like one of the main like people. And the fact that you'd be involved in any sort of sting operation is kind of nuts. But I think she's getting stalked by this guy, wouldn't
she? She's been getting phone calls or letters from Eddie. Our news host, Karen, has been getting messages from him saying, oh, hey, have a chat with us, will you? And she's realised that he's a murderer. And she's going, okay, murderer, I, with very little police support, will meet you in a sex shop.
In the back room.
Yeah, in the back room of a sex shop. I will come and meet you, and you might give me a clue about who the murderer is. And we see some other people, like Bill, her husband, is in the studio. And the technology people are listening in, and they, because there's too many neon lights around, apparently that messes with their radios, and they go, oh, too much neon. You knew there was neon there. Like, you've seen Renna going. But
get yourself set up weeks before this happens. Plan ahead.
Neon interfere with radio waves?
Maybe that's next time we're on one of these calls and get a bad signal or anything like that. The internet's dropping out. Like, oh, fucking neon.
Any neon lights you got going on here?
All this neon that's around, all up in this business. But they carry on. She makes a phone call. Like, Eddie makes a phone call to her and suggests, okay, come and meet me in this sex shop. So it's like a...
There's a very creepy close-up of him when he's talking to her, and he kind of licks his lips. And I'm not going to lie, it made me shudder. Now, usually a close-up of somebody's licking their lips, I might be, you know, all right with that. But in this instance, I was like, ooh.
Maybe they're just...
Oh, I'm definitely going to go meet you in the sex shop.
He's still human. He's still nervous about meeting Lady off telly. He's like, oh, I'm getting a dry mouth.
Let's just meet out in the open. No sex shop in a back room. That's what I want.
He knows the most. You know, he's the most upset about this man who owns the sex shop, because when TV anchor walks in there, all his customers, they don't want any. They don't want any of it. They're right off.
Euphemism for the usual kind of clientele they get in the
the news anchors.
Bloody news anchors, TV anchors. He's a massive anchor.
Yeah, all the people are trying to
every day.
They see the news. They see the news reporter come in, and they all try and like you know, one guy's looking at this stuff and goes, "Yes, that concludes my research on things that are disgusting and I would never buy."
I'm writing a novel. All right, I'm writing a novel.
Yeah. I'm the health inspector.
Well, this isn't the library. Looking for a nice book.
Yeah, and she goes into the back of the sex shop, and Eddie comes in behind her, and he puts a film on. And just watch this bloody film, all right? I guess, oh, don't want to watch it. It's horrible niche 70s porn. What are you doing?
It's like there's like a woman getting stripped and bound and possibly raped. Like, it's not pleasant. Obviously, Karen, I don't know if you've even mentioned her name's Karen, have we, this news anchor. Karen, like, clearly bothered by it. She wants to turn around and get a good look at Eddie, but he's having none of it. And luckily, he's just a silhouette because the light's directly behind his head, which is handy.
And then he's saying, oh, no, don't turn around. He says, oh, I thought we could meet each other. She's trying to trick him, like those people do when they're trying to befriend a murderer to catch them. And meanwhile, the police are trying to catch up, but because of all the bloody neon, they can't. They get some advice from some of the local, like, people out in the streets that she's, oh, I saw the famous news anchor heading down to this sex shop. just as, like, Eddie gets ready to unleash his plan and goes, all right, you can turn around now. And she turns around. Karen, like, breaks down into fits of screaming. We don't really see at this point what has
weird
become
noises,
of Eddie.
We
hear it.
Yeah, there's some
it
weird noises.
It sounds like he's cooking popcorn. Like, it's a weird goblin sort of sound.
And the police who intervene, incompetent. You got one man who's like 98 years old. Mm-hmm. And the other guy who's like, I think he even gets called Quick Draw McGraw at one point, where it's just like he hears a noise and hears a woman screaming, and he just fires his gun into the booth.
Idiot. I mean, this is an incredibly poor taste, but like this is obviously like this could have been called into a court case of a well-known sports person years later who fired through a door when he heard some screaming. He hears some screaming in a room and fires blindly into the thing, but thankfully he gets Eddie, he shoots him, and Karen is rescued, but she immediately but she can't remember what happened. Instant amnesia.
Instant amnesia, which I feel like is just handy, that is, isn't it? Instant amnesia when we needed information. He's already dead there. So Eddie Quist has been taken to the morgue, dead. That's usually what happens when you go to the morgue, is because you're dead. You don't usually go there for a nice visit, but two people go there for a nice visit, and it's these guys who are... Is it now that this happens, or have I jumped ahead?
What? They go to the morgue quite a bit later.
Yeah, it's a little bit later,
So I think around about now, Karen, we see her talking to her therapist, Dr. George Wagner. I don't know why I've added a sort of German twist to that. AKA John Steed, and he's trying to sort her out, but she's screaming and crying and just making a big old deal of it, really. I mean, I don't blame her.
Well, she gets upset because the next day, the boss in his chunky knit sweater... the same, like the boss of the network has the same fashion sense as Mrs. Voorhees. He's got his he's got a big blue chunky knit, and he goes, "Nah, get on telly the next night." And she freezes, and sees like the image of the horrible porno in the lens of the camera, and she can't speak. So, as sympathetic a boss as anyone's lucky enough to have, he's like, "Oh, for fuck's sake, get her out of here. Get her to see the doctor." And the doctor, John Steed. Oh, near-death
experience, is it?
God. Oh, not right for work. The next day, get the other reporter.
Hours to sort yourself out. Hours.
And he goes, "Right, get yourself to the doctor." And the doctor says, John Steed, "Oh, I've got a lovely retreat. If you can go to, if you want to get your memory back, you just go and hang out there for a bit. It's very nice. And you'll be sorted." And her husband, Bill, is a nice chap at the minute, and he's very supportive of it all. And
does he call it a colony? Does he say, "Get yourself out to the colony"?
Oh, it's like colonoscopy. It has got a name.
Colony.
You might be like, really? a colony.
You could put your
trousers. This is where, like, a take the tube out, will you? What? This is where basically a whole new movie starts when they get to this secluded. Yeah. Countryside resort, where you arrive and there's a whole flurry of interesting characters, like a guy doing a barbecue, and that's when Chris says he's not interested in meat. Don't like meat. I'm a vegan in 1981.
And there's a dog boy, and there's Mark.
Wait, no, don't just brush past that. There's a dog boy. What is he? Just a.
It's just a dog boy. There's just a boy, and he's got like a 90s X-Men saber-tooth jacket. He's just got this like
exactly
shaggy
what he's got,
jacket that he wears. So he's dressed as Sabretooth.
He's a Quist. How do you pronounce that name? Quist. Is he a Quist brother?
I think he's a Quist, yeah. So I think you've got... Actually, is he a Quist brother? I think he's a Quist brother. Let's say he's a Quist brother. He's a wrong'un, basically. I think he thinks he's a dog. He's got a good sense of smell. He's a bit dog-like, sniffs your arse, humps your leg.
Martin. What's his name again?
Martin, so you've got, like, dirty little dog boy!
So basically, your major characters at the Doctor's Colony, you have dog boy, you have barbecue boar, then you know the man that's like, "Yeah, I've been barbecuing this," and he's talking about how he barbecues all the meats. Yeah. You've got...
Maniac Marcia, is it Marcia?
Yeah, yeah, Marcia, a.k.a. woman voted most likely to seduce Bill the second she comes into it. Me? Seduce people? Absolutely not.
She's got, like, a necklace made of, like, teeth.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a very, very. She look again. Looks like she stepped out of a completely different film. Looks like she stepped out of a Hammer horror film onto this.
Or like a music video, like a Twisted Sister music video or something. Her hair's kind of backcombed a little bit, right?
Yeah.
She died quite young, that woman. Elizabeth Brooks. She died at like 49 years old. She had like a brain tumor or something. Bit of a shame.
Has she been in anything else?
Lots of TV, I think. I don't know if she's in any films.
She's great in this role, though. I think she's ideal and looks pretty damn terrifying when we start seeing her get a bit toothy. Hairy and toothy. Very scary. So obviously, I think at this point, Karen kind of thinks it's a bit ridiculous. Everyone's a bit weird. But they do meet a couple of kind of people who seem like they're quite normal. There's like a woman in there. Is it Sam?
Yeah, the barbecue guy and his wife are quite normal. She's nice and also thinks Karen's good. Oh, you're my second favorite news presenter behind like this Asian lady who's much better than you. Like,
who never gets properly named. Well, weird backhanding compliment. Also, there's an actor called, I don't know if you noticed this when the credits rolled, there's an actor in this called Slim Pickens. Did you notice that?
No. It's that dog boy.
His real name's Louis Burton Lindley. He's like an older dude who plays Sam Newfield. So he's just one of the older people who lives there. I don't think he's a police officer. But yeah, his name's Slim Pickens.
I think he might be the kind of sheriffy kind of guy. Maybe. Yeah, just looking at the pictures of him.
Yeah,
I reckon that's him.
That's about right. Big bad Slim Pickens. So everyone's obviously nice and welcoming and stuff. Here on the Wikipedia, it does describe Marcia Quist as a sultry nymphomaniac. Jesus.
Someone calls her a nymphomaniac. Like, the doctor is having a conversation with someone. And he says, like, I think one of the others comes, oh, yeah, she's always happy because she's a nymphomaniac.
No one goes, it's gross of a water pistol. Get back.
But to be fair, there's not really anyone around for her to be nymphomaniac-y with. Because you've got Dog Boy, who thinks her brother. A load of old fellas.
Slim Pickens.
I mean, virility.
I mean,
who knows?
Choice,
Slim
Pickens.
So as soon as Chris
and then in marches Bill,
his knitwear.
In marches Bill,
yes, Bill, isn't it?
Furious mustache.
I keep saying
you can't.
I keep saying Chris for him. I've completely got his.
Chris is the other one. Chris is the like the friend with Terry and Chris are the other couple. Bill is her husband with his glorious mustache.
Mustachio, very nice.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Yeah, so what happens? There's like a hunting trip the next day. Well, first of all, let's talk about the old dude who suddenly becomes suicidal, looks at the fire like he's never seen it before, and he's like, I'm going to jump in that, Ed first. And the rest of the crew have to, like,
And the doctor, John Steed, kind of talks him down, right, and is like, no, you see, you do feel like burning yourself up in a fire now. Just wait till tomorrow, and you'll be really glad he didn't. He's like,
yeah. I was surprised that John Steed ended up there. I was a bit like, oh, it's the colony, is it? But you're coming here to get away from it all as well, are you? You're supposed to be my therapist.
Is he not meant to be, like, in charge of it all? Like, yeah. Maybe he should have led a couple of sermons or whatever they do, a couple of yoga sessions.
Yeah, he's more management, though. He's just sorting the curriculum out. He isn't doing any of the actual stuff.
Exactly. There's like a hunting trip the next day where everybody goes, and I think it's the first time Bill's like shot a gun, and he kills a rabbit, which he's dead proud of. And for somebody who doesn't eat meat, he's quite quick to just pop a cap in poor old Thumper's forehead.
Yeah. I loved a bit earlier on when Bill is getting his lesson on how to use the gun from the barbecue guy. He's sitting right now, practice shooting, and he clicks and he goes, and he's like, well done. Soon you'll be able to try with real bullets.
He says, oh, you're pretty good, aren't you? How does he know? He's literally firing a gun with no bullets. Like, surely anyone can pretend they're good with that. Click, 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 click. Whoa,
got
him. Man.
Got that one as well.
Got him, yeah.
That's effectively actually working around. Like, why even hold? Like, do you reckon there was a scene before that where he wasn't even having an empty gun? He was just rocking around like,
yeah. Pretty good.
Oh, you've blown him all the way.
All of the guys were going, ah! Great shot. He kills a rabbit, and then he goes to the dog boy. Oh, I killed this rabbit. What should I do with it? And he's like, well, my sister cook it up for you if you ask her nicely. Go up to the cabin up there. She loves it, and that's where Marsha's hanging out. There's loads of animal skins on the wall.
Yeah, they live in like a proper log cabin sort of thing. Then it's like a hunter's cabin. It's not like a real house. It's there's like skins on the wall. That's why they dress like they do, I imagine. Although it's more like pleather than like a laser tooth guy's jacket.
But you see, there's also cows nearby, because in a scene
earlier,
one of the cows gets got, so she could make her leather vests from the cow.
There's lots of noises all the time, aren't there? Like in the woodland, there's like a really weird noise at one point, and I think one of the people at the colony says, oh, it's just the cows next door. But it's like,
oh, that was it. Cows, it's like, it sounds like unless they're ghost cows, because it like goes.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, ghost cows. Well, the cowling.
The cowling. Oh, the name game. You've ruined one of Luke's name game.
I mean, it could have been a ghost cow, because the next morning the cow is dead. Like it's had his head chopped off.
Didn't think of that.
Bill is starting to get into it a little bit, but Karen's having a bad time, and Bill's problems escalate when he goes to ask Marsha to cook the rabbit, because he goes in.
Oh, is that what you call it?
He goes, oh, you
you dirty boy. Don't even know you.
I know what you're saying.
Chop up this bunny. You give this. You skin this bunny for me. And she goes,
I can do that.
She even does that in like, quite a highly sexual way. Like, she's being very firm with it and sort of looking at Bill with every drop of the cleaver and rip of the skin.
Nigella Lawson.
He feels it like a banana.
Now you want to pull this rabbit's skin straight from its body, just like this. Mm, lovely.
And Bill's tail like, pops off.
Unfortunately, that.
Oh, yeah,
that
the tail production pops off.
That's the notion technique hasn't quite worked, sadly. And Bill sort of really bluntly asks her, having not taken the hint from how suggestively she's skinned this rabbit, he's saying, oh, so how long is it going to take to cook then? And she says, I'll cook it in a bit, and then just snogs him. And at first, he kind of snogs her back for about, I don't know, 5-10 seconds.
That's muscle memory.
Oh, is that what they say?
Yeah. Oh, no!
Yeah, it's like if someone snogs you, it takes a good 5 to 8 seconds to realise. And then he violently just shoves her across the room. Doesn't use words. Doesn't say, "Marsha, I appreciate that you're a nymphomaniac, allegedly, but that's not appropriate." He just shoves her and storms out.
Yeah, waddles out. But then he gets on the way back. He's like walking through the dark woods, right? And that's when he gets attacked by a wolf of some kind. I imagine it's probably Marsha. I don't know if he gets overtly stated as such. But he gets nibbled on the arm, I think.
It could be Marsha. It could be Dog Boy.
It depends. I mean, to be honest, it could be any of them at this point. I mean,
yeah, that's true. That's a good point. That is a good point. Because the transformation does take bloody ages.
I've seen Dragon Ball Z episodes with less build-up than...
I'm going to transform. So Marsha would have had to start transforming the second he left in order to get round and be able to scratch. Yeah. Does he get bitten or just scratched?
I think he gets bitten. I think it gives him a little bite.
Yeah. And he manages to make it back to the cabin afterwards. And Karen sort of gets him in. And then I think the doctor like gives him a shot of something.
Yeah. Well, it's weird because the morning after he gets out of bed and Karen's like, "Whoa, where'd that scratch come on your back?" And he's like, "He's sort of in your head. You're so paranoid."
That's a little bit later.
After. Right now.
Of course.
Right now, it's just that it shows that they're out of sync sexually. Because earlier on, Bill wants some sex when Karen is still traumatized from her encounter with Eddie. And he's like, she's like, no thanks. And he's like, fair enough. I'm still nice, Bill, right now. And then here in the cabin, after he's been to the hospital, Karen sort of suggests, "Oh, I was wondering if we might." And he was like, "Oh, for fuck's sake, stop being so pushy."
Basically, whichever one of those has been through something that's affected them mentally, or you know, a bit of a harrowing experience, the other one immediately gets horny. you've been through a near-death experience, have you? You've been attacked by a creature. I'm gasping for it.
But they're out of sync. So they do a turnaround and just go to angrily sleep. And Bill
angrily sleep. Right, that's it. I'm just gonna sleep now.
Angry as possible. Go angrily to sleep. But unfortunately, it must what goes around comes around, because obviously after Karen's gone to sleep, Bill wakes up and goes like,
"Bill horny.
Kind of do fancy some sex now." It's kind of like that, you know, when you know you're at a restaurant and you go, "No, I won't have any dessert, that's fine." And then you see other people having dessert and you think, "Oh, pissed off now."
That's exactly it. I think there's a day that we've kind of missed where there's a bit of a subplot, which is Terry and Chris go into the morgue looking for Eddie's body, which is gone. The guy who works at the morgue is so like nonchalant about everything. Yeah. He's like, "Oh, the worst time I ever had was when a bloke I used to work with in the morgue left and then came back in later on the gurney."
But the way, when classic, he opens... like mortuary humor, so he's like, "Hey Eddie, you've got visitors. Just there must be someone in a morgue in Relative," just plays it straight. Just like, sure, I'll do you got the proper paperwork? Sure, you can have a look at this body.
He is just nonchalant where the body's missing and he says,
"Well, you can't just walk out of here."
Yeah, that's exactly what he says. And I think like not long after that as well, doesn't Karen
Chris and water? Oh, they go to the bookshop to see Mr. Futterman from Gremlins and they see Dick Miller. And he's got it all laid out. He gets rid of all the bits of unnecessary lore in basically a sentence. He's like, "Oh yeah, werewolves, they can transform whenever they want. They're shapeshifters. Doesn't matter about full moons. That's all nonsense. It's all in these books here that I sell. I even got some bloody silver bullets that someone ordered and then didn't come into." What's the ISBN number on silver bullets?
Yeah, he's got it all going on. Handy. Because it's literally just around the corner from them. And I think after all this as well, they're like reading the book at night.
They're watching like wolf cartoons. Everything's wolf related.
They love it. Yeah. They absolutely love
it. It must be like, you know how on Discovery you have a shark week? It must be wolf week, because all the programs are either about bloody John Steed talking about the animalistic side of man and, you know, the balance between the animal and the man. Or there's programs about werewolves, or there's a wolf cartoon on. It's Wolf Week here on whatever networks in this country.
So Karen calls Terry, doesn't she? And, like, it's weird because she's like, well, you got to get up here right now. Chris has gone mental.
They go up. And this is the time when Terry, she does come up because Chris can't come because he's got to stay at the TV studio a bit longer.
Yeah.
And sort some stuff out with Mrs. Voorhees, the boss. And so Chris goes back to town, and Terry's having a conversation with Karen. It's like, so what's about this Marsha? She's trying to seduce Bill, is she? Because, probably. And then they just move on.
I can't remember exactly whether it's the night he gets attacked or the night after, but Bill does go and meet Marsha in the middle of the woods.
After he's turned down sex with his wife, he wakes up and, like we gave him the dessert analogy, he's like, oh, I've got the remorse now.
I don't want sex with my wife. I want wolfy sex. That's what I want. Wolf action.
This is how you escalate your transformation scene, right? Because we've seen transformation scenes in Werewolf. They've been doing it since the Hammer days. So what the gang thought here, like, how can I bring up my first wolf transformation scene we've seen on camera? I know. We'll cut it into a sex scene and we get a twofer. So regardless of what turns you on or makes you uncomfortable watching a film, there's something for everyone here.
This is like the loudest, most aggressive wolf on wolf sex scene ever. You know,
it's
when
the
you
only
hear two
wolf
fox
on wolf sex scene I've ever seen.
Well, you don't know what my, don't talk about my internet search history. But you know when you hear two foxes going at it in the middle of the night?
Oh yeah.
You're like, bloody hell, they're loud. What are they playing at? Don't know if they're fighting or whether they're fucking. This is like ridiculous. No one's trying to be quiet at all. These wolves are screeching. I think John Steed even looks out into the night like, that sounds horrific, but good for them.
Yeah, he's not like a classic old man in a thing. He's not like going to throw a boot out there or something like that. He is.
He just goes.
He is.
Go on, my son.
Doesn't Terry also hear him? He's like, oh, put the recorder on.
Is she there already, Terry, at this point?
I'm not sure if Terry's there or not at this point, but at one point she hears wolf sex and puts the recordings on.
Dirty little voyeur. Just go record that against their will.
Just the audio is enough for me, thanks.
And then I think it is the next morning when Bill has got a scratch on him and Karen says, you've got a bloody scratch. And she says, he says, oh, that was from when I got attacked the other night. And she's like,
by a wolf.
By a bloody wolf. I'm surprised Karen didn't hear it. He can't have been that far away.
Does she say, you've been with that Marsha, right? You've been sleeping.
I think she does accuse. Yeah. She says something like that, and he says, you're being paranoid. And that's when he gives her a backhand.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
This is rough. In many ways, werewolfism has worked against him here because his bite has healed, but those incriminating scratches have not. So only plot relevant injuries remain. But before we talk about the, like, Bill's clearly turned into a wrong'un now, what did you make of the transformation? How did you rate this versus the obvious comparison, American Werewolf?
I think it's good. I like when they add bits of rotoscoping in there. Every now and again, they do like bits of animated stuff over the top. So you see some wolf shadows or something moving.
There was a moment when it panned out from the sex scene and you see the fire raging. It's just their silhouettes.
Yeah.
And they kind of become more wolfy. That looked cool. Yeah. I think there's something about that that looks really odd and unnerving.
Of its time as well. Like, if you get that,
it's strange.
That kind of stuff. Yeah.
It becomes almost animated towards the end, doesn't it? It looks like a scene from The Raccoons. Even just like a painted background in the forest. But yeah, I liked the transformation, and we see a few more of, like, it's really backloaded into the last half hour, but it's good.
Mm. Yeah. And it's the quickest transformation to wolf that we see. Every other time it takes a long time. Lots of wobbling.
If you just move your head slightly, Luke, as well, we can see just obviously only for video, guys. I mean, that is horrific. Look at those bug eyes. Looks like yeah. Look at those bug eyes. And then move. Yeah. Terry goes up to the cabin, and it is nighttime. She's doing a bit of digging. She goes up to a cabin, and she gets attacked in the daylight by a werewolf first.
Is it Eddie's cabin that she's found? Because it's earlier on in the film, we missed it. They find Terry and Chris find Eddie's house, which is where they learn his name, and it's full of drawings that he's done. And Terry has seen the same landscape picture that he's done is here in the colony, so she kind of knows now.
Yeah.
So she goes up and finds Eddie's house. Convenient?
Like that, her psychiatrist, she picked him out of the Yellow Pages. He'd turn out to have a colony that Eddie kissed the guy who was stalking her.
We don't know. Like, it could. This is the thing. It could. How far back it goes? Maybe he was her therapist, and then they fought with her as being a victim, and then he got Eddie Quist to start stalking her or something. You know, it could
be. Why are they so obsessed with Karen?
She'd make a good werewolf. She'd make a top quality werewolf.
She does make a good one. Like, when she turns, she looks like a kind of Ewok looking cute.
Beautiful werewolf. But she's just there. She's their second, as they say, she's the second favorite news reader. They don't want the first favorite news reader off the news.
Well, because she needs to keep reading news.
Yeah, they can't take the best out of the game. How are you going to get your news?
Yeah.
Exactly.
But Terry gets attacked by a werewolf. We don't know whom in the house. We learn a bit later who it is. She thankfully manages to lock him in the bathroom for just a second, long enough to hide under some logs, and then
cuts his hand off as well.
She
axes the little hand off.
She grabs a chopper after she jumps out the window, and when he's trying to get his arms in there to reach her, she hacks it right off. That's a good scene, and I like the transformation.
Really cool, when it reverses back into a human hand, and it's like popping and snapping.
Very bubbly.
Remind me of the Gremlins. There's a lot of bubbling stuff in Gremlins. Yeah.
Bubbling, really juicy stuff. Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of these werewolf transformations are very juicy. They're quite juicy transformers, are these.
Yeah.
But I like how, because we see it quite often the other way around, right, where a lot of the effort is put into the transformation to werewolf, but this reversion of the hand is great. It's a nice little scene.
Yeah.
So after that, Terry immediately runs to another cabin or another area. The doctor's office, She calls Chris, who's watching a wolf cartoon of, what is it, the Three Pigs and
Three Little Pigs. Yeah.
Three Little Pigs. Basically says, there's definitely werewolves up here. I've seen them. I've had one of their hands off. Chopped his hand off. But then Eddie Quist arrives, definitely not dead, but he's got a bullet hole in his forehead.
Yeah.
And while the while still onto the phone, he begins attacking Terry.
Oh, man, this.
Well, this is like the what I would say the main transformation scene in the film, right? When Eddie Quist turns, his head starts to whatever it's doing.
But he's a werewolf first, right? Eddie is transforming to and fro like anyone's business, because his first arrival on the scene is almost comical, because she's on the phone looking in the filing cabinet, and he's like, on her shoulder with one big werewolf.
I forgot about that. It is very, it's kind of insane.
And Terry holds up a little sign that says, "Uh-oh," when he comes in.
Wait, does Terry see him as a human? Or are we getting mixed up with when Karen sees him?
I think we might be getting mixed up. Yeah,
I think he's just all wolf at this point.
All wolf at this point. I mean, this is pretty good, pretty terrifying. I mean, it looks very dog soldiers, like big hairy prosthetics and stuff. It's like really effective, especially for like 1981 as well. It's weird because Terry's obviously scared of him, but I don't know, not quite as scared as you would be with a massive great big werewolf looming over you. She's a bit like, oh no, like a big spider's crawling towards her or something. Not quite scared enough.
Yeah.
She's like as scared as if like you've just noticed that your washing machine's overflowing and you don't know what to do about it.
Oh, oh. Bloody hell.
Do I stop it?
So she's on the phone and it's recording her, like there's like a phone recording thing happening, as she gets eaten, right? It bites into her neck and kills her. Then Karen arrives in the same place, and then she goes to see the body, but Eddie Kist is under there instead as a human this time.
Yeah,
that's right. So the first time it's Terry, and she sees that Terry's dead, and then she turns away to phone, or to try and phone someone, right? Only to find the phone is off the hook.
Yeah.
And then under the cabin the next time. I thought for a second, is it going to be Terry transformed? But it's not. It's Eddie. And he'd replaced her.
Yeah, the sneaky little bugger.
So I think pretty much immediately as well.
He'd obviously like lifted her off, put her on the floor, got under the blanket thinking to himself, this is going to be brilliant.
And it doesn't pay off. No one comes in for hours. He's just left there waiting. So around about the same time, Chris, who heard everything on the phone call, goes and grabs the silver bullets from the shop. I think he pays, but then he's like, I don't know how much these even cost. He's like,
Bill me.
That's what he says. So then he's heading towards the colony with a load of silver bullets, which is handy.
Yeah. So Eddie has like a bullet hole in his head. He takes the bullet out. And then he starts to do the wobbly transformation bit.
He's been keeping the bullet hole in his head all that time. I'd be like, I could not touch it. I get like when I get like an ingrown hair in my beard, I can't ignore it. It's got to come out immediately. If there's a bullet in my forehead, I'd be picking away at that.
Maybe you liked it. It looks kind of cool.
Yeah, definitely. Look great.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of discipline around not looking at it, so he could do it just when it had the most effect. And this is when he begins his like Dragon Ball Z style transformation with his wobbling and shouting.
So this, when we talk about the long transformations, he's transforming, I think, for about 10 minutes. And then as soon as he's done transforming, he gets acid in the face and he's done.
Yeah. So Karen could have run away at any moment. Like he's definitely got his eyes screwed closed during pretty much the whole transformation. So she could have just snuck out or ran out or anything. And she waits until he's done transforming and goes, are you done transforming? He goes, and scene, and he just gets the acid straight in the grill.
Yeah.
In the in a deleted scene, you actually see that the acid isn't in that flask. She goes away to its component parts and actually mixes it. She's like, yeah.
Get a little montage of her in the lab, make it
like the beakers. Yeah.
Holy acid.
These salts in here.
Getting like, right. Harbour to prey on it.
She sits down to like have a dinner while she's there as well.
There's a Pilates session.
Just standing there like.
And then she
acids him and then runs out. But she captured. What happens?
She gets captured and taken to the cabin, which is where she's introduced to all of them, and then we find out they're all werewolves, right?
Yeah, did she capture by the doctor? She runs into the doctor and she's like, oh, bloody hell, Doc, there's werewolves. And he goes, is that what they're saying? And he's like, just captures it.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. So Chris gets to the colony pretty quickly as well. He like manages to find, I think, does he find Terry's body or just blood?
No, I don't think he finds Terry's body because I think Karen tells him that.
That's right, just like casually says, your girlfriend's dead. And he's like, oh, bloody hell.
But Eddie's there, and he's kind of, it looks like he's got like a Skeletor thing going on. Half his face is not there anymore.
Oh, yeah, because he's been acided, and he's turned into regular Eddie again, so he's wasted that transformation.
Yeah. But he plays a tape of Terry getting killed. And he starts to transform again. And the thing he's like, I'm going to shoot you. And I think he says, shoot me then, or something. I can't remember.
Oh, because he doesn't. What he's foolishly done is hubris has been his undoing. Because he actually snatches the gun off him at first when he comes in. So he snatches the gun off Chris before he's transformed and gone, oh, I'll tell you what. Yeah, take your best shot. Have your gun back. He hands it back to him. And he goes, I will. I'll bloody shoot you. And he goes, oh, do it. And he starts doing his transformation. And does he get to transform the whole way? Am I imagining
I don't think he transforms the whole way. He's still got a neck.
When he gets him.
Chris just looking at his watch going, oh,
10 minutes later.
I've got places to be. I've got other werewolves to kill, not just you. Yeah. Bang!
Yeah, he shoots him, and then Eddie thinks, oh, bloody hell, that is a silver bullet, isn't it? So Eddie's done.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'd feel like a right silly sausage, wouldn't you, if you told him to shoot you and then he did and it was a silver bullet. Ow!
And you gave him that gun back. But I think it gets more than one werewolf, because he goes to the cabin where they've kind of unfurled it to Karen. They're like, oh, if you just come along with it and let us turn you in 12, you'll think it's dead nice, honestly. It's like a hot tub. You get in there at first. Maybe it feels a bit uncomfortable, but settle in.
Yeah.
And Bill's there, and he's like, oh, it's true, I've settled in.
There's like internal politics and conflict going on as well. Some of them think that werewolves should be out in the open. The doctor guy says that's not the way. Someone says, like, humans are like cattle to us.
They're kind of overwhelming him, right? Yeah, they've been just... They're given cows and they try not to eat people because the doctor's plan is that they can harness it and they can actually run a society. Because the doctor makes a very fair point that if they get discovered, they'll be sorted, they'll be done. Mm-hmm. But they don't believe the doctor anymore because he's made a right pig's breakfast of this, hasn't he? Because people are being shot all over the place. They're going to overrule them.
Chris starts getting a proper kill streak going on with these werewolves. What I like about it, he says, don't come any closer. If you come any closer, I'll shoot you. And then they do, and then he shoots them. Eat shit.
Yeah, he does it like, having already seen definitely one werewolf, I wouldn't need quite as much provocation as Chris does here. The second someone showed me even slightly long teeth, I'd be like, bang, bang.
He wasn't even a werewolf. He just had those long canines that some people have.
Yeah.
Dead.
Yeah.
Please don't shoot me. Bang.
I know he's a werewolf because there was a silver bullet that killed him. Not just any
bullet. Silver bullet in the head, which killed him.
Definitely a werewolf.
Yeah. If you'll notice, the bullet I shot him was silver, so I put it to you that he was a werewolf. Of course his body looks like a man now. That's because the curse has been broken.
Yeah. So it does get a bit gremlinsy around here. Like, it starts to, you know, chaos starts to swirl around, people start to transform, a fire starts. Also, there's like a body that's been half eaten in the middle of the barn. I don't know if we even saw who that was. We just saw like exposed ribs. I don't know if it was Terry maybe or someone.
Oh, was that the leftovers of Terry? And they have the fire because they can't turn Karen into a werewolf and she can't just disappear. Because she's famous, so they have to make it look like she's died in a fiery car accident.
Right.
So that's why there's all the petrol. And so
they lock them in, don't they, with the gun? They used a gun to... no other exits.
It's a different gun, not the silver bullets gun. They have another gun that they use to lock them in. And they set them on fire because Dick Miller has told them that silver bullets and fire kills werewolves. Fire is easier to come by, so... not so pricey.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. And then werewolves are transforming and burning, but we don't really see like anyone definitely die at this stage, do we? They just go and get in the car, and obviously, like, not all of them die because the werewolves surround the car as well, trying to get in.
A lot of them get out. If you'd been Chris here, and then it would mean they wouldn't have filmed, you would just stay by the burning barn and anyone who comes out, shoot them. But he doesn't do that. They want to get off.
Yeah.
And they're going along there and they get slowed down in the road because the policeman who we assume is also a werewolf because he does die when he gets shot with a silver bullet. Oh,
well,
Doc
he's got
has
teeth,
already been
hasn't he?
Shot.
He's got sharp teeth.
Has he?
The police.
He's got teeth. Oh, get him dead.
He's got teeth. I've got teeth. Shoot him. Yeah, he's like, at this point, he's obviously like, oh, he must know I'm a werewolf so I can finally allow my real teeth to show, because that was painful, holding them back this whole time. Yeah, so they get him, and then they escape and survive. But Karen does get...
Bill.
Not quite, yeah.
Bill gets in the car.
Yeah. Yeah,
sure. How he gets in. Just climbs in.
Yeah. Bill gets in. They
get the keys.
Manages to give Karen a little nibble before he gets shot. They look back and go, oh, Spuddy Bill. No, he's dead, though. He's died with a silver bullet.
I knew it was him because he's a werewolf with a mustache.
Nice blonde mustache. Yeah, but he gets, Bill eats shit. They've got what must be all of the werewolves, but they get an awful lot of them and escape. But Karen has taken a bite and she knows what that means. And she explains to Christopher that, they know what they've got to do. They've got to get the word out because that's the only way to stop the werewolves from... They've not mentioned any aspirations of taking over, but let's assume they're wrongins. They're going to want to. So they've got to get the word out. So to do that, they go back to Television Central, get Pamela Voorhees to put them on the news. She's back, ready to do these things. And she's given Chris some instructions that we can infer. He knows what he's going to do. And then this was the scene that, even when I didn't remember this film particularly well, I remember this bit and I remember this ending scene because it's really cool, right? Where she starts going off, she's going off like off script. The TV producer is going, oh, what's going on here? I mean, this isn't off the auto cue, pull it off or something like that. And like Chris just tells him, he's like, no, leave it on, dickhead. And she it's manages important. To get through some stuff where, it's not just like vague metaphors about anything. She goes, literally, yeah, word to your respective mothers, viewers of this news program. What I'm here to tell you is there's a secret society of werewolves that are out amongst it. And you've got to watch out because they are werewolves and they're wrongans and they'll do for you unless we do something about it. And to prove it, this. And then she stands up and does a cool transform, right?
Turns into a Furby right there on camera. And then they shoot it. Just so all the kids see a cute thing die.
Yeah. She's like, she could have been a good werewolf by the looks of it, with her blue eyes and like beautiful mane and crying. She might have been a nice werewolf, but Chris had his instructions, so he
to be like a Chewbacca, like a female Wookiee.
Very Wookiee like, definitely.
Yeah,
very Wookiee like.
And then we're kind of left with a almost like a They Live ending, right? With there's all these things on the TV and loads of people are watching. The transformations going on.
Well, it's crazy what people can do with special effects. Everyone just thinks it's a stunt. Nobody really believes it's real.
One or two guys, though. He's like, no. That woman turned into a werewolf and they shot her. But anyway, on to other business. All right, love, do you want anything from the barbecue? And it's like, oh, I'll have a hamburger, please. Could murder one. And you know who it is.
Rare, please.
It's only Buddy voted most likely to seduce Bills. Buddy Marsha.
She survived, and she just fancied a pint and a burger. Yeah. That was it. Nothing sinister.
Those burgers look quite nice, I've got to say.
Yeah.
Okay, one of them. You'd have to be a werewolf to enjoy those burgers.
Yeah.
That's that. Yeah,
that's that. So, we've got the name game for you, if you guys are ready.
Always.
The what? First one is about a film. After a bizarre and near-deadly encounter with a serial killer, a television newswoman is sent to a remote mountain resort whose residents are constantly towel dry.
Is it the toweling?
Towelling.
Correct.
All the clothes are dressing gowns.
Another one, after a bizarre and deadly encounter with a serial killer, news lady is sent to a remote mountain resort whose residents may or may not be wearing Batman masks.
The Cowling.
Cowling. Well done. I'm not sure if you get that, because not everyone knows that they call that the cowl, the Batman cowl.
You're a Batman fan, mate.
It's ready.
After a bizarre encounter with a serial killer, television news lady sent to a remote mountain resort whose residents may or not be pulling angry faces at her behind her back.
Scowling.
Bizarre dead encounter with a serial killer. Television news lady sent to a remote resort where residents may not be picking up after their dogs.
The fouling.
She shouldn't have any. Depends on it. No fouling.
No fouling.
I've ever done. This is the best I've ever done.
Okay, what about this one? After a bizarre, deadly encounter with serial killer, television news lady sent to a remote mass resort whose residents may or may not be competing on Countdown, but without consonants.
The fouling.
Correct. Well done. Ben, you nailed it.
One absolute great, great version of Name Game. Not just because I did well. It's great.
Concept, hot streak.
That was a hot streak. The hottest streak I've ever had. I'll get them all wrong next week.
We need to rate the film. I think I know.
Yeah. It's great. I really like it. It's a solid werewolf movie. Solid werewolf transformations. It's a bit cheesy, but it kind of feels like it knows it's kind of cheesy. And I was invested the whole way through in all the characters, and I think for a final scene, it's awesome. It stays with you long after the film ends, mainly because I was a bit hungry and I couldn't stop thinking about that rare hamburger going on the grill. Exactly. But I think I'd give it a B+.
Whoa. I put that B+ as well.
Solid. Whoa, man. Oh, my God.
Solid werewolf movie. I liked it more the second time I watching it than I did the first time for some reason. I think I just went along with the sort of the fun campiness. Because it does start off being kind of sleazy in that kind of fun 80s horror sleazy way. But then halfway through, it has a kind of campiness to it, which I enjoyed.
Yeah.
What about you, Andy?
I think that the howling is, and from what I could hear from you before the neon cut me out here, I think we have some similar feelings on it. I think that the transformations, the long as they are super cool, and it's really cool to see the practical effects that the guys put into it. It kind of leans into its grubby cheesiness on occasions. And I know this spurned a franchise, which I might have to follow up on the rest of. I know some of them are famously awful.
Yeah, I heard it gets fun, awfully fun.
There's one about marsupials, right? Where they're kangaroos, maybe? Who knows? Real?
There's a musical, legit? I think. One's a musical.
Oh, my goodness. I'm definitely going in on more of these then. But yeah, it was fun. Sure. It embraced, I think, some of the silly parts of it. And you can't argue with those effects. And I still remember that final TV scene to this day before I went back and watched this movie again. I am going to give this a flat B, I think. Nice B, right in the middle.
Lovely. Very nice. Cool. And argue right. That.
Nice one. So next week we're doing The Taking of Deborah Logan.
Yes, indeed, we are. Not seen that before either, so another first watch for me.
Interesting.
Yum, yum.
Got a Bonds a month this month. It's going to be great.
Cool stuff coming up.
Cool. Okay, so if you enjoyed the episode, please head over to patreon.com/HawkandCleaver. Thanks to Callback to Cameron for our theme music. Thanks to Acast for hosting the show. Thanks to the listeners. If you enjoyed, please consider rating and reviewing, and head over to the Horror Hangar Board Advisors Facebook group. Thanks to my co-hosts, Ben and Andy, for being right horror dudes.
Thanks, guys. An absolute pleasure as always.
Later.
Nice one.
See you next time.
Bye.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.